This is Careers in New Media with Douglas C. Welch. For more information, visit the website welchwrite.com/CIP. That's welchwrite.com/CIP. Spreading the Word, a presentation to the Orange County Podcasters on February 11th, 2009. ocpodcasters.com.
So hello, hello. How many people here already know me, or at least know of me? I think a lot of, yeah, we've at least run into each other somewhere along the whole PodCamp, Podcast Expo, my blessed soul, and other places along the way. For those of you who don't know, and for anyone who's watching on the stream, my name is Douglas E. Welch. I am have taken to describing myself as a pioneer podcaster. I was one of the first 20, as far as I can figure out. I started September 24th, 2004. So I'll be celebrating my beginning of my fifth year in September. That being said, we are at least now at the day when you say the word podcast to someone, they don't stare at you dumbly. They tend to go, oh, yeah, I sort of heard of that, typically from NPR, you know, or something like that. Oh, yeah, you can listen to the show via podcast on NPR. Tonight, I decided when Megan and Jason asked me to come over to talk about pick a particular topic, spreading the word jumped to my mind, because this is what I've been talking with a lot of people about, is how do you, now that you've got your podcast up and running, you've been doing it for a while, you sort of settled in, you got your flow, you got the tech working and everything, how do you let people know about it? And this ties into a topic that I've talked about in the past. I've actually done talks on this at Bar Camp in San Diego and here in LA, and that's the concept of visibility. In fact, this was the entire theme of last year for me, a year of visibility. Because the fact is, you can be the best at anything that you do, the best writer, the best director, the best podcaster, the best dancer, whatever. But if people don't know what you do and how well you do it, doesn't really matter, because you're basically doing it for yourself again. And doing it for yourself is a good enough reason to get started, but most of us want to have other people enjoy our work. Sometimes when I'm grumbling about my podcast stats, my wife will look at me and says, well, what are you so grumbling about? You wanted us to do this, right? And it's like, yes, but I want to have as much effect as possible in the world. And visibility is how you do that. And what we're talking about tonight then, of course, is what other services can we use besides just our podcasting itself and our websites to get the word out? Because the fact is, I'm sure most of you are on Facebook, most of you are on MySpace, most of you on Twitter. Twitter is my kind of number one thing that I like. These are the tools you use to get the word out and to tell people what you do and how well you do it. Which services do you use? Well, we mentioned a few already. The fact is, it's going to be up to you which services you use. We all have personal preferences. Some people, Jason made the joke about MySpace. Some people love MySpace. I think it is just butt ugly. And it gives you the tools to make your pages look even uglier. I will say in that case, Facebook, I like, it just prevents you from making things look too ugly. But both MySpace and Facebook are excellent social networks to be part of. In fact, I would say, of all the social networks out there, Facebook probably has the most juice right now. They are just bringing in new people by hordes and throngs. I finally forced my wife to get a Facebook account last night and suggested about 10 of our friends to her, and they all added her within like seconds. You're here now? You know, and so everybody just jumped right on the bandwagon there. Among the big name services like Facebook and MySpace and Twitter and others, we have new services released every single day. And a while ago, I was sitting around and kind of had the discussion with myself that we've all had. It was like, oh, God, yet another podcast directory, yet another social network, yet another service. How many of these do I have to sign up for? I'm just so tired of doing. And then for some reason, I had just signed up for something new, and I had an epiphany. And the epiphany was, whenever I sign up for a new service, I do the whole thing, you know, run your address book through and find who you already know there. But darn, if I don't come across 5, 10, 15, 20 new people who have never heard what I've had to say and don't know me from Adam. And then I was like, okay, there's your reason right there. The fact is, every new service you sign up for, you're going to meet new people. And that in itself, you may not use that service. This isn't a service, it's a piece of software. How many people, did anybody use Evernote? Evernote? Great piece of software, my God. Cannot fit it into my life at all. It's one of those things, like, I keep looking for uses for it. And Twitter was much the same way for me. I looked at Twitter initially and said, God, I don't know how this is. It started, and all of a sudden it just took off. For whatever reason, I was able to integrate that into my life and integrate it into my work much more easily than anything else that was out there. Please feel free, by the way, if you have any questions or comments or brickbats. Does anyone know what a brickbat is? Old school term. Let me know, though, if you have any questions. I'd be happy to. Yes. In the back. Yes, sir. Our host for the evening. Yes, sir.
If I'm jumping too far ahead, please let me know.
I will.
This is the third time I've heard the same message. I'm sure it's important.
Do it.
LinkedIn and Twitter. And I've never been on those things. I personally think they're a waste of time. But I'm hearing more and more that they're not a waste of time. My take on it is that everybody spends their time getting reacquainted with the new features, the new upgrades, the new updates, your new members, your new friends, and you do so much upkeep on maintaining those relationships, and like 5% of those might turn into a following, and then you have the new Facebook or the next link, or what, and you're constantly going from social network to social network, which is a reflection of everybody living online and not offline. So what I'm asking is my question to you, what percentage of all your efforts during a MySpace or a Twitter or a Facebook is actually going to come to fruition in regards to listeners, followers, or somebody's actually going to give you what you're looking for, which is that network? What percentage are we looking for?
Well, actually, I won't say I have a percentage off the top of my head, but maybe I'll come to one as I talk about this. This is a common question I get from everybody because it can be a time sink. Twitter is like crack, if you let it be like crack, okay? You're like, oh, what was Twitter to you? And you're constantly... The point is, every piece of technology has an off button. We're not at Fahrenheit 451 yet. You can still turn the blasted thing off. And I highly recommend that you do turn it off. And this is kind of related to what you're asking, but I think I'm going to get there eventually. The Twitter, MySpace, Facebook, to me, the way I look at the RSS feeds as well, are a river of data. They're a river of data that flows 24/7 whether you're there or not. This is not the tree falling in the forest. It just flows by your door. The fact is, I don't have a lot of time every day to look into that river. But when I do, I reach out and I dip my toe in the river and I do a little Twitter and I do a little this and I do a little that and then I let the river flow by. And what happens, though, is people get fixated on that river. They think they have to read every post, do every application on Facebook, friend every person who friends them. You know, you can really burden yourself in trying to do it all. And I think that is one of the biggest things that turns people off from doing it. What you need to do instead is, and this really gets to the heart of what I'm going to talk about tonight too, is you need to integrate your social networking that you do into your life. It shouldn't be something you do on top of all the other work you're doing. It is one event triggers a next event, triggers a next event, and a next event. What you do is you get all these things set up, and then when you have something happen, for example, I'll use example, I took two photos on my iPhone when I walked in tonight. We were all sitting around. And I used a piece of software called Shozu. Shozu allows me to basically take a picture, upload it to the Shozu site, and then set up a bunch of different carbon copy sites where that picture will go. So with one picture, one description, one title, send, it went to Shozu, it went to Facebook, it went to MySpace, didn't go to MySpace, it went to Flickr, it went to Twitter or TwitPic. So with one action, I can take one action and have it basically spread itself out over all my networks, so I'm not sitting there buried in taking time to go, oh, I got to put it here, oh, I got to put it here, oh, I got it here. And that really boils down to what the talk is about tonight, is you want to be using all these tools, but you need to make them work for you, not you work for them. Because it's very easy, as you've seen, to get buried, to get sucked in, if you will, to all these different things. And for me, that's also an important reason of what I was saying before of, I've lost my train of thought, but that's what happens. I saw the hand go up and went, oh, he's got a question. I got to get to him. No, it's not your fault. You let the tools work for you, not you for them. I'll leave it at that, and then we'll move on. Yes, sir?
So one question. So I use LinkedIn all the time. Mm-hmm. I've gotten lots and lots of business through that, which has been great. I use Facebook, and I've got that now as a social thing. And then I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn.
And I'll just stop you right there for one thing. LinkedIn, and he said the magic word. He used the service. He got business. Yeah. To me, that's the only validation I need. Twitter worked the same way for me. I have a Twitter experience like that. Mm-hmm. I've actually booked billable hours off of Twitter. Okay, and it's useful. End of discussion. But anyway.
Yeah. So I do technology consulting. So that's been really great as a way to kind of get out there and let people find me. And trying to do podcast promotion and all that type of stuff. It seems like the people that are really they're influential have tons and tons of followers. So like the people that are kind of the Leo Laporte community or whatever, and they post a lot and they participate a lot. And if you can't spend hours a day posting and participating and all that, you know, if it's 45 minutes at 10 o'clock at night, how do you attract that following so the people hear, you know, so the people hear you when you're Twittering, oh, there's a new show that's going on?
You'll hear this discussed on the networks a lot, Twitter especially, you know, number of followers, stuff like that. The fact is, you know, it sounds like an old saw, but it's not quantity, it is quality. If you have 50 people who really want to hear what you have to say, that's better than 5,000 people who are kind of like, meh. Because, in fact, you're going to have a much deeper effect with those people. Again, the point is to engage in it when you can. I often tell people, do not stress over this. These are tools that are there to benefit you, not to make your life more difficult. We each put into our efforts the energy and the time we have, and that may vary from day to day. I know when I have to go out on a consulting call, well, guess what? I'm not on Twitter that much of that day. Big deal. Next day I might be. The next day I might not be. The goal is to take the time you have and use it the best way you can. The fact is, too, that the quality of your output, your Twitters, your Facebook messages, your pictures, are what attract followers the most, and more importantly, what keep people following.
And they're going to find you through searching, and so you need to think almost in terms of
like... Much like web pages. Remember back in the old days, we used to say, oh, we've got to have a great homepage. The homepage has to be perfect. And then I would walk into someone and explain to them, you realize that about 0.02% of the people ever see your homepage? Because they're all coming in from search engines. Very much retweets, things that people pass along, Facebook status messages, all that's how people come across you. I was lucky enough, I follow Christine Liu, who's an expert on Chinese business and stuff, and she's quite a regular Twitter user, and we chat back and forth, and she, very nicely out of the blue, we had a discussion, she was having some trouble getting her podcast up running, and I helped her over Twitter, and she said, oh, you guys, you should follow Doug. My God, the stream of people just from one recommendation that came in was amazing. I mean, I don't get those that often, but that's one way, just with one little offer to help. And this is something we find in our own lives. If you take what you know in your real life and apply it to the online world. We know that if we help somebody, if we do something good for somebody, it pays back. It comes back to us. And same thing is true online. If I see someone struggling and having a question, they're like, God, you know, really complaining about this, that, or the other, like, this didn't work or that didn't work. If I can, I'll step in and say, whoa, can you explain to me a little bit more what's going on? And, you know, and try to help them. That's led to billable hours. It's led to some great relationships with people. That's the type of stuff that I find the most value in doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you find any value in having a traditional email list anymore, or is it just...
Great question. And yeah, that's very funny because I was starting to think that email was kind of like dead, that it wasn't that useful anymore. And my sister is a computer consultant out in the Coachella Valley. And she had started to do some email work with some of her business clients and stuff. And all of a sudden we began to realize, no. Email is still really, really important. And it doesn't have to do with any lack of technological savvy on the part. It is still a very, very effective way to talk to the most important people in your life, which are those people who want to hear your message. everything about social media, everything you do online, your website, your email list. In fact, I typically start people, if they want to start doing something with quote-unquote new media, we actually start with a mailing list. That's where we begin our travels. Everything you do is designed, and it kind of sounds like a kind of a bad way of saying it, but it's designed to gain permission from those people. When someone signs up for your email newsletter, when someone subscribes to your podcast, when someone becomes a friend of yours on Facebook or MySpace, when someone follows you on Twitter, they have given you their permission to come into their lives whenever you have anything interesting to say. To which I add, make sure you have something interesting to say. But they've given you permission. My wife is a television writer, and you know the way television writers talk about it is, would you want to invite these people into your house every week? Well, that's how people are going to be looking at you. Do I want to invite this person into my life whenever they have something to say? That goes back to that quality versus quantity issue. If you're providing the quality of material that people like to follow, and frankly, I look at Twitter and everything I do, subscribers to my podcast, Twitter, Facebook friends, whatever, and I look at the numbers only from the standpoint of, do the numbers stay steady or go up? Not because I'm trying to get 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 followers. I use that as a gas gauge, if you will. Okay, I'm still providing value. I find it very heartening that if I gain a follower, it's rare I lose them, beyond the onesie twosies that we all lose because you know we're just not talking about what they don't hear about. You know, the average trend is what you're watching. Is the average trend going up? Well, if it is, guess what? You're doing the right thing. You're saying what is of value to these people. You're delivering something there that they can actually find useful. Any other questions? Shozu.com. Shozu.com. Their web presence is nil. It's almost entirely mobile. And there's an iPhone app, and there's also apps for pretty much any other, even the lower end, like my little old Nokia phone, they have a Java app that'll run on it. And we'll get in a little bit more towards the end too of services that I use and why I use them. That one just happened to come up as a good example. Did I answer your question?
Not even close.
Okay.
and if you want to ask me right now, that would be great.
I'm going to come back. I want to come back to it because
I didn't think I did,
and that's why I want to come back to it. First goal, only do it if you want to do it. You have to see value in doing it first. Otherwise, there's no reason you're going to hate it, and I get that all the time. I don't want to spend all my time doing this. Then don't do it. That is truly, that's the turning it off. Because the fact is, not everybody has to use every tool all the time or at all. That said, start with, if you want to try, start with one service that appeals to you the most out of everything you've seen. Twitter is sort of nice because it's low maintenance. It's low requirement on you. There's not a bunch of Facebook people throwing apps at you saying, you know, poking you and all. You know, that doesn't apply to Twitter because it's very terse. It's, I'm following you or you following me. Here's the messages. It's a stream of data that comes by. That's, I would say, off the top of my head, that's probably one where I would start with. Having an email. Now, do you have an email list for the business? Honestly, going back, that's where we start. We start with an email list because that same email list allows you to basically feed these other services. So you could pick another service like Twitter, Facebook, whatever, and take your mailing list and say, who of the people that is already on my mailing list are on these other services? Then you could basically find that subset of people on the other service, and you would have a core of people to begin with right there with very little effort. Of all the things I do, and one of the comments I get from people, how do you do all this stuff? How can you be on Twitter and Facebook and MySpace? It's like, I'm lazy, okay? I'm as lazy as any other person. I am not spending hours of my time maintaining and monitoring these other services. I tend to try to make services feed each other. One of my favorite things on Facebook is what's called a fan page. Facebook fan page. For one big reason, when someone becomes a fan of your studio, of your club, of your podcast, whatever, it says in their mini feed to all their other friends, Douglas E. Welch has become a fan of blah. And I just like that verbiage. I think that that verbiage is much better than the friend kind of term we've gotten involved in.
And then the fan page becomes basically an email list.
The fan page becomes another subset, another group. It will have some of the people that, for example, that would be on his email list, but it's going to also attract people who live and die in Facebook. And that's what I see going to these other services is, which is, you're basically, I come from small town Ohio. If a storekeeper was getting rather successful in their small town, well, what did they do? They would open up a store on Main Street in the county seat. That's sort of what you're doing. You're basically saying, I respect you as customers. I'm going to go where you live. I'm going to open up a store closer to you where you do all your interaction, where you do all your work, and be there for you. This doesn't mean, though, that that's where I spend all my energy. Everything from Facebook and all these other things, as far as friend requests, status updates, news, anything like that, I get notification of all that stuff by email. You will not see me sitting in Facebook all day reading and doing stuff on Facebook. I will interact there when people tell me they want to interact via Facebook. They live and die on Facebook. They like to do status updates on Facebook. They like to write on my wall on Facebook. I'll engage them there when they do it, but I am not out there all the time pushing on that particular service like I would, say, on Twitter or my own websites or something like that. Does that make sense? So you can reduce the load. You can actually reach out to many of these services by really doing stuff once, oftentimes. Shozu being one example of that. You can do something once and actually feed all these other services and not feel that you have to dedicate hours and hours and hours a day to monitoring and maintaining your relationships on each of the sites. I do it because some people live and die in their favorite service. And so I basically set up my little storefront on Main Street and said, hi, I'm here where you are. And if you want to interact with me here, you can. Otherwise, I'm not going to really bother with it that much. Yes?
And one of those things regarding like the fan page or something like that is, say you get your biggest fan. You promote them as someone who can maintain that particular page and then allow them to, you know,
That's a great idea. It's you get people who respect you and are interested in you, and they can actually become a surrogate for you on a lot of these other services.
Leo Laporte, perfect example.
Yeah, I mean, Leo is a huge, he kind of the Uber example of all this stuff. The Twit Army is literally that. They do so much for him as far as promotion and maintenance of online sites and sharing of information and stuff. He doesn't have to do a lot. Frankly, he doesn't have the time to. So this is a way for him to utilize the group. You know, the Orange County Podcasters is the same way. Any group is. Each of you has your own little network. And each of you serves the bigger goal of bringing people to the meetings. Because we tweet, we put it on Facebook, we put it on our blogs. That all feeds back into the group. So you have these little subsets that then feed back into the whole. And hopefully, the group feeds back to you as well. I know I saw several links come in today from the website today. Well, I was sitting over at Starbucks. I drove down early because it's of traffic coming down. I want to make sure I got here on time. Closer? No? We'll talk later.
I just wanted to, like, 20%, 5%, some sort of ratio, because you sound like a pretty, you know, familiar tech guy. In fact, everybody in Orange County Podcasters probably knows a lot more tech-savvy than that. But an observation I've made by associating here is that we seem to have an understanding that we need technology to communicate, to duplicate and reach out more and more numbers. But I'm trying to get the side of, we're emphasizing how to do things, but I want to know what is the hypothetical results. You know what I mean? I come on a nightclub at Southwest Plaza, I hand out 10,000 flyers in 1 month with promoter teams. I'm going to trash you for 200 people out of 10,000. So, what are we looking at? I mean, is there any sort of guideline at all from personal experience? Out of the 20 hours a month I do on Twitter and all my other social networks, I get 5 leads or 50% payoff or 10% interest. I mean, there's got to be something.
I guess it depends on the people that are going to it too.
Yeah. You know? Well, and it is
and
something.
I think there's a general gauge. I think it has to be a general something. I think most of the people that are on there like being on computers and behind a computer screen and plugging into people that way. I like to go to a coffee shop and shake hands. Mm-hmm. There's got to be some generic. You know, I refuse it. It's not dependent on everybody. It's got to be.
You know, honestly, I can't. I couldn't say there is a generic.
For your
because, I think everyone's personal experience is different because we're all dealing with a different audience. And in my own life, I deal not just with one audience of me. I deal with my consulting clients. I deal with my people who follow my LA events listing. I have a gardening group that follow me. And I would say each one of those is different on every different service, too. So that's why I guess I'm having a little trouble coming up with a hard number for you. Because it is so...
Just from your personal investment of time.
It depends on how you handle it, though, too. I've got two Twitter accounts. One is personal. I've got a lot of followers there. The other one is for a business that I'm trying to start. And my tweets there are very different because I'm targeting a student audience, whereas on my personal one, I'm targeting whoever thinks I'm interested.
Yeah. Yeah, I can come.
It sounds like it's always going to be a variable, which is kind of ironic considering we're using constant thinking, linear thinking here.
Yeah. It is variable, and it is so unique. It is very unique. I have anecdotal things that I can point to. Like we talked about, I booked hours, he's booked clients, stuff like that. I can point to those specific results, but I would be really hard pressed to say blanket. It's going to increase your cover at the club by 20%. The fact is, and this is actually a good topic, because the fact is, I don't think you know that until you actually try it. Because the fact is, you don't know. It comes back to another point, which is, you actually don't know, none of us really know, who our audience is. I am always surprised by the people I find who listen to my shows, because I would look at them, I would maybe notice their background and go, why are they listening to me? Obviously, they find some value there, but it wasn't the type of thing where I could say, they're going to get value from my show. They're going to enjoy this band at this club or this set of the club. We often can't tell until we actually start doing things. Now, of course, the great thing with new media and with social networking is where you're having to put up, X number of dollars to print out 10,000 flyers, new media, which I think is one of its benefits, is you can start to just kind of throw stuff against a wall. You throw something out there and say, worked, didn't work. Worked, didn't work. And what you'll find is, just like with your flyers, which flyer worked, which flyer didn't, which band worked, which didn't, the same thing applies online. I think it's a little cheaper to do. It is an investment of your time, but it does definitely costs less capital income. And that's the type of thing you do. Try Twitter. See if it works for you. It may not. It may or may not. Try Facebook. May or may not. The other nice thing is you sort of figure it out pretty darn quick, too. Because you'll see a spike or you won't see a spike. You'll see interest or you won't see interest. And that's basically what I've done over the years, is I'm really fond of forward movement and trying stuff out. Frankly, if it doesn't cost anything beyond a few minutes of my time, it's worth it to do. You throw it out there and see what sticks. And so maybe that's variable. It is extremely variable. But I think you'll find that in business too. I mean, I know I have a friend who's a well-known vegan chef in the Valley. And the fact is, he thought he knew what his clientele were. This place is a white tablecloth, fine dining. This is not health food, okay, vegan. This is fine dining. And he thought, okay, this is my audience, right? After 6 months, he's going, whoa, yeah, I have some people who are of that audience, but I have people over here who will come in and order takeout 3 nights a week. Because I'm the closest vegan restaurant to where they live. And he's like, okay, hadn't really thought of that, ordering takeout from a fine restaurant. But the fact is, it's great food, and that's what they want. So he didn't really know, and he couldn't really know until he tried something. So definitely, does that make sense? Okay.
Well, and this may feed into it a little bit. I know one of the things that I've struggled with, and some of my clients where we try to use this for marketing, is that if we're looking at our website, we can get really scientific about the analytics there, so we can say, we got this many people to get the site, we had this much stickiness to it, this was our conversion rate, we can track trends, we can do all that kind of stuff. You can figure out what the search trends were and like how people got there. So that there's a lot of data that you can get to. But other than looking at followers or LinkedIn gives you a thing to say X number of people looked at your profile in the last couple of days.
Well, if you look at Facebook fan pages though, I think they realize this.
Right.
Facebook fan pages, you're starting to get some stats in there. There are third-party services to give you Twitter kind of stuff. I mean, honestly, let's fall back on the old tried-and-true method, a coupon or a coupon code. Guess what? You know exactly where they came from. If you have a coupon code tied to a particular campaign, it's just like someone walking into a restaurant with a coupon.
So what are you using to get some of those metrics out of Twitter?
Off the top of my head, I could not... I, Unfortunately, I've been going through so many of them that I can't really think of one off the top of my head.
Mr. Tweet is one of
them. That's more. I thought Mr. Tweet was more for finding people you want to follow, though.
There's also TweetDeck.
TweetDeck is just a client actually, and but it has abilities to watch search terms and stuff like that. There are some. God, I just did one too. Forgive me. It's new. Contact with me later. I'll figure it out. I'm sure it's in my delicious links. Because I know I've retweeted it and it's picked that up, but I'd be darned. They all have tweet or twit or something in them, so it's not jumping to mind. But it is fairly new.
Okay.
But it would tell you, it would give you some interesting stats there, yeah. Yes?
I think one of the other things that you've got to keep in mind with new media, social media, whatever you want to call it, is that it's different than traditional media.
In some ways it's different, in some ways it's similar, yeah.
Well, if you're going to use it the way that it should be used, it's about building relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just going to use it to see how many people are coming to your website or how many people are following you on Twitter, you're missing the point of what it's about. That when you tweet a group of people, you're building that relationship with them.
I'm going to jump ahead in my outline because the term I've come up with so far, and I don't know if it's going to stick because I have like three other variations on it. There are systematic uses of these services, and there is unsystematic use of these services. A systematic usage is retweeting a blog post, retweeting a Flickr picture, retweeting a twit pic. The unsystematic use is engaging in the conversation. Now, I think it's best to have a balance of both. Frankly, if I just posted something to my blog, that, for me, answers the question, what are you doing? Well, I just posted this to my blog, so I really don't have trouble with that particular type of use. If that was all that I was doing, then I think is where you run into problems. In fact, and I'm sure you guys do this yourself, if you're on Twitter, you're on Facebook, any of these things, if someone says, I want you to follow me, I want you to be your friend, what is the first thing you do? Well, in Twitter, I bring up their last page of tweets, and I look at it, and I say, how many are systematic, how many are unsystematic? How many were just part of the conversation? How many were added to people? How many were just reposted blog items or links to other sites? And I look at it, and I can get a pretty good idea of yes or no. And more importantly, do the same thing to your own. Go look at what your feed looks like. Go look at what your last page of tweets looks like and say, would I follow myself? Because sometimes you'll figure out, oh, I've been really spewing this lately or that. And you can then begin to adjust. And so the systematic uses, I think, are what fall under that being similar to traditional business methods, handing out flyers, Yellow Pages ads, stuff like that. It's the unsystematic usage, I think, which helps to balance it and help to build that conversation. It's very interesting. I started using Google Reader a couple months ago. I'd been using a local app on my Mac. And Google Reader provides one really neat feature, which is the ability to share something. You know, just say, yeah, this is interesting, share. And it adds it to, you know, a shared web page, and it creates an RSS feed, which you can then feed to your Twitter. I was sort of watching that. I sort of actually paid attention to this. When I started sharing stuff and having a tweet out of what responses I was going to be getting from people about that, because that's a fairly systematic use. It's a pretty much one-way blip. At least that's the way I thought. As it so happened, when I started doing it, the comments, the thank yous, the at replies I was getting back were like, oh, wow, that's so cool, thanks! Again and again and again. Again, not what I expected. I was actually a little leery of it. But the fact is, I suddenly found a new way of providing value to my followers in a fairly systematic fashion, but they actually got a lot of use out of. And so that's the type of thing where it has to be a balance between the two. And in that case, I figured out, wow, that actually, people like it. Okay, I like it because I like to share stuff. I'm all into sharing. And that was a way I could do it. And they accepted that and said, yes, we like that. Now, had they said, what's all the, you know, if I'd gotten, you know, ads by, what's all the spew, blah, 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 I would have stopped because I would have realized, no, they didn't want that. That's not what they were expecting from me.
But getting those comments back from them is part of the building relationships. Yeah. Passing out flyers to somebody, you're not going to get a comment back from them.
You might, if they're at the club. I mean, if they're at the club, I know you like, as you said, you like being out amongst people. You like shaking hands. You like talking to people. So I'm sure you hear from the people at the club, yay or nay. I mean, it's probably pretty clear.
Traditional marketing.
No, I would say that, I would disagree. I would say that is. Word of mouth, I think, is probably the most traditional marketing out there. Because it...
Okay,
No, I think even business marketing. You had the cart salesman walking through the streets of New York City at the turn of the century, shouting, you know, strawberries, apples. That it is a very and this again, it's personal choice. We all have different ideas. To me, just off the top of my head, because I haven't really thought of this much before, I would say word of mouth is probably one of the most fundamental traditional methods of marketing. I think what's happening now is we're finally getting back to that. We're finally realizing that power of word of mouth, that power of personal connection through the technology. And I think we're rediscovering what was something that's pretty important at the core. We all, for the most part, like to be around other people and like to talk with other people. And I think the technology these days is just finding different ways to facilitate that.
There's just a difference in how we define traditional.
Yeah.
I think traditional marketing is things like newspapers.
I'm going much further back. That image of the barkers in the street just struck me of like, oh gosh, yeah, that was word of mouth marketing. That was, so I'm taking traditional as meaning old and ancient in that case. Not television advertising, newspaper advertising, stuff like that. Yeah. Devin, did I see another hand while I was talking? Systematic versus unsystematic. What do you guys think? Better term for it you guys got? I'll take anything. I think I had another one which was like substantial, unsubstantial, or something like that. But that's the best term I've come up so far, because systematic meaning it's generated automatically by some other site or by me pressing a button rather than me engaging in the conversation. Yes?
Automated versus engaged.
I did have one. Automated versus something else.
Engaging.
Yeah. So, again, look at your last page of tweets. Look at your mini feed on Facebook. Definitely worth looking at and saying, would I follow me? Sometimes it's not the answer you want to hear. And mine varies from day to day. I'll look at it one day and go, oh, yeah, I got to stop talking about this or that or the other and move on to something else. You try with social media, again, going back to sort of your question, you try to make it as easy as possible on yourself. One of the ways you do that is you feed one service into another. Twitter, for me, has sort of become my kind of home base, both sending and receiving. I Twitter stuff out, it gets sent to Facebook, it gets sent to Brightcat, some other services. But then those services also talk back to Twitter. If I check in on Brightcat, it Twitters out. Some people, when they first started doing it, they're like, I don't want to have blah, 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 I don't want it happening. And again, I had a test case for Brightcat. I was in Arizona on vacation visiting some friends, got to Phoenix, checked in via Brightcat, which Twittered out. Within 5 minutes, I had 4 responses. Oh, there's this neat thing going on tonight. You got to come over, and it's here, and it's like, whoa! I mean, it was an immediate bang value. Thank you very much. Moving on. So now you will see me check in via Brightcat that I'm over at the Starbucks across the street here when I got here early today. Come over and chat. We'll talk. Whatever. There is, it proved its value fairly quickly to me. Friend feed. I actually like friend feed, but it doesn't have the traction. I do like the live streaming capability. If I tell people, if you want to know more about me than you ever wanted to know, follow my friend feed stream, because it has pretty much everything that I do. And it's nice to have that. It's nice to have a place you can point people and say, boom, this is what I do day in, day out. If you really want to know everything about me, check that out. Yes, sir?
I had a friend of mine come up to me, and we were talking, and he started listing off. He knew my Twitter, he knew my Facebook, he knew my daily mugshot, he knew my URLs. And it just for a second freaked me out how much this good friend of mine knew of me. Is there a point where there's too much sharing?
It's very personal. It is. That is a very personal question that has to be answered by you. Some people are more comfortable with that than others. I tend to live my life pretty open and out there. I'm still listed in the phone book. And maybe it's just because I'm cheap and I refuse to pay the extra price for an unlisted phone number, but I'm in the phone book. And I've actually had clients who found me years later. They hadn't needed me for a couple years, and it's like, I don't have Doug's number, and they literally found me in the phone book. It's a personal decision and almost a day-to-day, minute-to-minute decision.
What about do I tweet this?
Do I tweet this? Do I take this picture? Do I share this? I think of that every day. I think of that every day. And you know, what part of me do I share? What part of me don't I? The fact is, I'm weird, and I have, like Jason and I were talking before the meeting, we have interests that just vary. You know, we don't have one thing that we're interested in. We just have, I'm interested in, I say a geek in one thing, a geek in all things. So I'm a geek in food, and I'm a coffee geek, and I'm a wine geek, and I'm a gardening geek, and, you know, all these different things. And so I have a lot that I want to share with those groups of people. And so I tend to put more of my stuff out there than someone who's more focused in their life would do.
Maybe on a slightly unrelated topic, but in Facebook, you know, all of those flinging poos, pokings, and all that stuff.
Ignore them. I don't accept.
And people won't feel a.
This is a great question. No, and if they do offended, so bad, too bad. Okay, not friending someone, not accepting their poke. Not first of all,
following somebody.
Yeah, first of all, with the applications, they don't know when you've ignored it. You just don't show up. It's not like you. It's not like it sends a message back to them and says, "Doug said you are full of," and so he flicked it back in your face. You just don't show up. Unfollowing, people can't actually see when you unfollow. Again, though, if you're not providing value to me for following you, I mean, extreme example, I get followers, for whatever reason, my podcast is pretty widely distributed nationally. Anyone who can be an English speaker can listen to it, and it's probably also, they can also read it in English, so if they don't quite get the audio version, they can actually look at the text, and sometimes it's easier to read a language. They'll follow me on Twitter, but all their tweets are in Dutch. There's no reason for me to follow them back, at least until we get a translation engine in Twitter, because I can't read what they're saying. Now, that's an extreme example, but that is the same thing. If what you're saying back to me just doesn't have value to me, it's okay to say no. Again, it's okay to turn it off.
Well, about a month ago, I decided, if you follow me, I'll follow you back. And I'm starting to regret that decision. Twitter's not as much fun as anymore. It's not that conversation.
You cannot. I started with that too, trying, and even then I wasn't religious about it. I wasn't trying true about it.
If you're blatantly selling, I'm not going to follow you. But
But it's. You have to make some decision. I just discussed my first line of defense decision point for a Twitter refollow is look at their last page of tweets. Are they saying stuff that I would like to see come up? Would I want to invite this person into my home every day? You know? And sometimes I'll follow someone and they'll send out something particularly scurrilous. And it's like, I'm a pretty open-minded guy, okay? For growing up in a town of 2,000 people, I'm pretty buffed up after 24 years of LA. I can deal with a lot, and I really don't have trouble with it. But there are some people that's like, I don't want to see that. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear talk like that in my home. And, unfollow. That's my choice. In fact, that's all of ours choice. We have the choice to engage or not engage. And we should never, ever feel bad about using that power. We should never feel bad about ignoring an application on Facebook or not refollowing or not responding to an email. The fact is, sometimes there's nothing I can say. I had a friend, a very good friend of mine, write me an email about something we did and was going off on, did you get the rights to do that? Do you have permission to do that? But it's like, so I wrote like 4 or 5 paragraphs back. And I looked at it and went, and I deleted the last 4, all but the first line, which said, nope, no permissions. Because that's what needed to be, that's all that needed to be said. I didn't need to engage in that conversation of why they didn't do this, that, or the other. It didn't matter. The answer to the question was, no, we didn't have it. And that's fine. And that is your personal power when it comes. I hear this a lot. I hear, they'll not like me. They like me. They really, really like me. That's how I feel. But no, you are who you are. You only invite certain people into your home. You should only invite certain people into your social network. Now, I have people in my social networks that I don't know very well at all. They are probably an acquaintance, even someone who basically is a fan who might listen to my podcast. But I tell them, tell me you listen to my podcast and I will add you to my LinkedIn network. I will add you to my Facebook friends because I respect you. You've given me permission to come into your home. I will reciprocate in some way. Don't tick me off. Don't trash me, or don't light the carpet on fire, I'm going to kick you out. That's fine. I'm not sure how we got kind of tied up in that concept with social media, because in our own lives, we practice that on a second-by-second basis. And I would say, and I've never really said this in public, you know, consciously put the thoughts together, but your question brings out is, treat social networking like you would treat your life. If you don't want them in your home, don't bring them in your home. If you want to kick them out of your home, kick them out of your home. That's your power. You have the power to unsubscribe from a podcast feed or unfriend somebody or in some cases block a certain series of messages from someone. That's, you're right. You have the power to control your flow. And you should never, ever feel bad about doing that. That, to me, is the lowest level of self-preservation. You know, if I were faced with Twitter messages that I didn't want to see every day, I would probably stop using it if I had no way of turning them off. And that's happened. There's been services and things that I've done where I just said, this is too much trouble. This is just too much trouble. It brings me down. Reading the newspaper lately, it's kind of like, why do I read this newspaper every morning? And there are days I get about two pages in and go, not today, because I just don't want to read it. I don't want to read it. And that is a power. Please use that. Yes, sir.
So another question, just as far as the content goes, and I don't know if this is the systematic and systematic, but you know, I've heard a lot of people say that they just don't want to see tweets and things where it's like just ate a cheese sandwich, mm-hmm. about to watch Oprah, all that. I've heard a counter argument that's like when you do that, you're sort of letting people a little bit into your life, like you're sharing some, just like, you know, if you were working with them at the water cooler, mm-hmm. it's like, what did you do this past weekend?
If you are just a mere acquaintance of mine, you just met me, and you started following me on Twitter, there would be some things that would be very clear immediately. How much I hate cell phones. I made a joke at the panel the other day. The guy's making a big show of turning off the cell phones at the beginning, and as he's going, and he didn't say anything, just witness the first act for the day, and he reaches up and holds the cell phone, and in the background you can hear me saying, oh, turn it up? Now I'm trying to come back to what your question was again.
So just the relevance of what you're putting out.
Yes. Do you want to hear that I ate a cheese sandwich? Yes. If you follow me, you'll find I'm a coffee geek. One in every 50 tweets says something about coffee. I'm at the coffee store. I'm thinking about coffee. I'm making coffee. So you all of a sudden know, oh, gosh, I didn't know Doug was so into coffee, or Doug was so into wine, or Doug was so into blah, blah. Yes, it... Because we don't have the handshake type of relationship with the people, we can't. We are simply too geographically isolated to have the handshake relationship. That is a similar thing to meeting and greeting someone up front. And sitting down and going, they order a gin and tonic and you order a whiskey, straight up. Oh, well, you've learned, just in your actions, you've learned a little about each other. And I think in some ways, yes, tweeting those things, again, though, balance. It's all about balance. If that's your entire stream, I'm probably not going to follow it too long unless you're a really good friend. Yes?
So one thing that I do on Fridays when I broadcast my show is I'll listen on an email like 12, 1 or 2, depending on where I can find time to do it. And I just shoot a quick email saying, hey, this is what's going on in my studio. These are the parties we're going to promote. And we're going to broadcast on this station at this time. Call in. So, and I found out that I have about 1,000 people on my email list, and I might get 2 or 3 people that will actually listen. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, somebody will call in while I'm broadcasting, and once in a while, somebody gets an email saying, hey, I like your show. That's something that I do because it's quick, it's easy, and, you know. Is there anything else you recommend that could be done to get people to know, hey, I'm going to podcast, or I'm going to stream live, or I'm going to... somewhat relatively, variably, maybe successful. Yeah.
First thing that jumps to mind is Twitter. Only because emails tend to be, they're asynchronous, they're time delayed. They may not read it till the next morning. Twitter, because it is more real time, hey, we're going to do this in an hour. We're going to do this in 2 hours. You're catching those people who are already there, in front of their computer, or at least in front of their cell phone, another thing. So that's the type of thing where I look at, maybe that would be something to try, is to engage them in a Twitter conversation because it is more real time. It's more synchronous rather than the asynchronous amount of email. With email, I have a 4-2-1-1 plan for PR and email, which is 4 weeks ahead, 2 weeks ahead, 1 week ahead, 1 day ahead. You've got advertisers, traditional advertisers already know this. People have to hear a message repeated 4, 5, 6, 7 times before they act on it. And I always walked around, I'm fairly conservative about it. I don't want to feel like I'm bothering people. As of late, I've been promoting, trying to get conversation going on some social networking sites I've set up for my podcast and for my other group, New Media Interchange. And I've been pushing harder than I normally would. And guess what? I'm seeing more results. I am nowhere near, this tells me I am nowhere near a saturation point for these people. I am nowhere near ticking them off. And I think you will find that in most cases, neither are you. You can push a little bit harder. And again, push a little harder and see what happens. You'll know when you hit that limit. Oh, trust me, well, you know when you hit that limit. And it's okay. People will forgive you for that. Tell them, oh, okay, I needed to know. I needed to know, you know, what you guys wanted to know. I find, because I am rather conservative about this, I am well below the threshold of almost anybody. So engaging in real-time stuff with them. And then think on the other example, which is go further out. Go a week out. Go 2 weeks out. And just you're just like, we talked about email before, and email newsletters came to mind. You know, think email newsletters, dead. But you know what? Every time I send out an email newsletter, and now I'm basically just sending out fairly frequent, like every 3 or 4 days, like one item at a time, not a big newsletter, but every time I send one out, I get a phone call or an email that says, ah, I've been meaning to call you. And I book an hour on it. You know? You forget that. It's just being in people's face. Because we're not, again, we're not in each other's faces. We are busy with our own lives. We're busy with our own businesses. So the social networks fill some part of that role, but then we have to find analogs that say, okay, this is similar to a handshake. This is similar to a running into someone at the local grocery store, you know, which is probably what I would say to that. It's going to send a newsletter, it's like, ah, I've been meaning to talk to you, I'm meaning to call you, and then you do whatever needs to be done. Very, very analogous, I think. Yes?
This might be a bit off topic, but it's about podcasting.
Podcasting? What? No, let's say that. No, I will say that if we're not talking about podcasting, except in how it relates to promoting your shows. Yes.
I've tried with varying degrees of success of actually posting episodes on those social networking sites. Mm-hmm. So people, you know, you embed a player or whatever. I haven't really had much success doing that because most of the sites like Facebook, they've got a thing, you know, add a video. So it's all about adding a video. And there's nothing really for adding audio. MySpace has a player that's part of the page, but it doesn't, you know, the files are too big and it doesn't take them. There's a lot of problems.
I can address the Facebook issue because I do this myself on occasion. Yeah. Now, I don't find a lot of results from it myself, but in Facebook, if you add a link, you know, using their little add a link box, it will then, below that, it'll see that blog post and it will put a player in there. It will put an audio player there with the logo. It'll say, you know, select which picture you want, and then,
yeah.
And you'd have to forgive me, I'm not sure which page that I put on, but I know I've done it. It could only be in the fan pages, it might only be on your profile, but when you share a link and it's audio, it will put a player button in there for audio. So again, contact me later and I'll figure out exactly what the circumstance is, but I'm almost positive I've done that. Audio's tough. Video is the focus of the world these days. It really is.
Yeah.
And some people have even taken to basically putting a static picture up with the audio underneath it and posting it as a video.
Because I tried to embed, okay, so you get a HTML code snippet and that's your embeddable player, you put it on there, and either they don't accept HTML code or only, you know, links, or the plane doesn't work.
Let's talk afterwards. I'm pretty sure I've done it. I'm pretty sure that they will put a player if it's an MP3.
Do you recommend even trying that or just linking back to where your
Yeah, I find linking, you know, this goes to another topic, so great, thank you very much. Having a place for your stuff. The end goal to all the social networking, by the way, is to bring people back to your house, back to your website, back to if you don't have a website or you don't focus on your website, back to whatever service you use. George Carlin talked about having a place for your stuff. Well, you have to have a place for your stuff to hold all this stuff. And then, yes, you're shipping out links to these things that people can click on and go. I think everyone on these networks is pretty savvy now about, oh, that's a link. That's going to take me somewhere. That's going to take me to this content. I don't think we have much of the days before with, what's that blue underline thing? People sort of gotten that much of the web. And especially in email. I think if you put links in email, I do some rich text email, but mainly it's text. And just putting the link in there and saying, click to play. And it goes. Yes?
I guess my suggestion to that is, what is it going to hurt to put a link? You know, if this does work, you can link to your podcast.
Well, I think it's time.
What I was trying to achieve with an available player that was coming from the services is you have one code or one player that's a static thing on your page, and as you add more episodes,
I don't use a multi-episode player, and I never have, and I can't decide if that's just because I've been doing it so long that I'm so old school that I can't. You know, hey, you kids, get off my lawn. I prefer to have one. And this is totally anecdotal. It's only my personal experience. If there's a multiplayer player, I never listen more than the first track. That's the one I'm there for. It's very odd, and that could be just totally me personally.
I try it so that it would list my most recent episode first. People would click on that. If they're interested in other back stuff, they could.
You did that and you saw some, that would be the thing. On your website, do that and then try to see if there's a way you can figure out, they listened to that one and then they played it, you look in your log files and then they played the next one, you could tell somehow they're doing it. I recently did something like that by adding a related items plugin to my blog that would automatically pull related blog posts in each blog post. And I haven't seen any big boost in, pages read yet. So that's still in testing mode. That sounds very similar to what you're dealing with. Does it really help? It doesn't hurt, definitely, but does it help? Yes, Jason?
But would somebody sit on, say, for instance, an example, you're on Facebook, you're looking at the, the river of information that's going by, and your 45-minute show is in that list there. You push play. If you go anywhere else off of that page, your show now stops.
Yeah, that's the trouble with them.
So if you have a 5-minute show, all right, I'll sit there for 5 minutes and listen to it. But if it's a 45-minute show, it means I have to open up another tab, I gotta go,
Or have a pop-up player.
Yeah.
Which then you run into problems with pop-up blockers and other things. But
post a 1-minute video of you inviting people to come listen to your podcast.
Yeah. Well, and another thing that I've done that I think has been successful to some regard, I need to get back on the horse. I've been a little lax right now on doing because the production time was taking too long for me to do, is I made a conscious effort to reach out to people who didn't already know about me. If I already got a listener, they've already tried me, they're already in that realm, they probably have heard about me, whatever. I wanted to reach out to people who hadn't heard about me. And so I started doing two things. I started doing Career Tips, which was a 1 minute, minute and a half video. I also released it as audio as well. Career Tip per day. Then, those didn't get posted on my blog. Those got posted to Facebook and Utterly and Seismic. Sometimes I did them in Seismic or whatever. They got posted to all those other sites. And their total reason for doing that was to give people a chance to stumble across me and hopefully then go back and listen to the actual podcast. And I have found that to be somewhat successful. I have found not a huge boost in my subscriber rate for that podcast, but there was definitely a bump. It had been plateauing here, and all of a sudden now it's plateauing up here. And so I point back to that particular effort as being one way of doing it. And so that's another reason why you should do it, is to reach out to people who don't already know you. It gives people a chance to stumble across you. And that's a whole nother talk I give. There's reasons you put your stuff on other sites. That when you put a video out, you don't just put it on your site. You put it on all the video sharing sites you can get to, because you are giving people an opportunity to stumble across your work. Yes? Question.
So I guess my question is, what is it that you're doing to make it more likely that people do stumble across it?
It's numbers. It's being in as many places as you can be, as easily as you can be in those places. For videos, and actually I'm going to kind of transition a little bit because we're getting a little long here. I'm going to transition to some of the stuff I use, and this is a great example of one of the things I use. I use a site called TubeMogul. TubeMogul.com, and there is another couple other sites like that. I've heard of one more, but of course I can't remember the name off the top of my head because I don't use it. TubeMogul is free. TubeMogul allows you to upload a video once, describe it once, title it once, categorize it once, tag it once, and submit it up to, I think, 15 different other video sites. Blip TV and YouTube and Google Video and Vimeo and Vidler and blah, 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 and all these sites. One upload.
But you still have to create individual accounts on all
the
sites.
The first time, you got to go out and create those sites. Again, that's probably the biggest hassle of it. The time savings you get at the backside pays for it immediately. I had not been putting my videos on these other sites because I wasn't going to sit there and upload videos one at a time to all these different sites. It just wasn't feasible in any way, shape, or form. It just wasn't enough hours in the day. Once I discovered TubeMogul, boy, bring it up. Okay, it's uploaded. Launch. And I walk away. There, I can go to another web page. I can go do 100 other things. It's working for me. Brings us back to kind of the whole concept of the talk today. It's make the technology work for you. TubeMogul is one way of doing that.
Do you need special software for that?
No, that's all done in a web page. You will find, if you follow me on Twitter or listen to me, I am cheap. Jason and I were talking about this earlier. Capital outlays, not if I can help it. And the fact is, in most cases, you don't need to try something out. All the services are more than functional at their basic free level. So you can definitely try them out and see if they will do something for you. TubeMogul, I think I've run into the limitation of videos I can launch 1 month. Because I think I was in heavy production mode and I was doing a career tip a day and a new media tip every single day. And I eventually just ran out of, you know, upload with them. That's rare. If you're putting up a video every now and then, no problem at all. I use Facebook. Facebook, as far as the big name social networks out there, I have found I use more frequently than the others. I have Facebook fan pages for the reasons I mentioned earlier. You do have to upload videos to Facebook separately. There is no automated. So that one I sort of do because I think there's a benefit to having them there. And so I will take that time to put stuff on Facebook, not as often as maybe somewhere else. You know, I have to consciously think about it and put stuff out there. Facebook events, I'm finding, again, I wasn't real sure about Facebook events. I was like, well, I was using upcoming.org, which is another service I use. I like that. I like that they have a little friends thing you can do there so people see friends of your friends and stuff like that. The it was brought home to me when I was doing Facebook events. I went, I got to do this more often. Because the fact is you can invite your friends, hard invite your friends. You can send something directly to them about this event and invite them. The response rate jumps dramatically than a site which takes them to a web page where they can do nothing. You know, most people with a Facebook event, if they're going to go to the page, they're going to say yes or no or maybe. They're going to say one. If they go to upcoming, they're going to look at it and go, oh, okay. And, you know, whatever. But because you sent that hard invite, it seems to have a better response rate. So, again, not something I thought would really matter, but I did it once, and it's like, dang, that was kind of counterintuitive for me. I didn't really expect that. Okay, moving on. I've learned something.
On the Facebook?
Yes.
I noticed there's, like, a limitation of, like, 20 or something invites that you can send at a time. So do you have to do that multiple times?
50. I just did it. It's 50. And I have...
There's no way to, like, group send it to, like, everybody on your list or whatever.
If you get someone as a member of a fan page, though, you can update everyone, regardless of how many fans there are. You can update everyone of the fans.
If you're creating an event and you want to invite people to the event...
I believe it's... You know what? No. For an event, you can invite as many as you want. It will just delay it if it's over a certain number. I think the only time you run into the...
7,000 limit or something.
Yeah, the only time you run into the 50 limit, I'm trying to think what I was doing because I just ran into it for the first time. I honestly don't remember where it was. I think it had more to do with friending groups or something rather than notices. The Facebook notice I do get, you know, when I update the fan page, it says, yeah, this is going to be more than 100 people, so we're going to... It'll be delayed, but it will get there, is what the little message says. Blip TV. Bear with you. Blip TV I use for putting out my video podcasts. There's other sites that are probably just as fine. I happened upon Blip. I like Blip for one important reason. It's not only, well, two important reasons. It delivers me a nice one-touch player that I can actually customize a little bit with my URL and colors and whatever I want to do to it. That's a nice flash player for the website, for those people coming to the website. Then I can also serve up my large videos sometimes directly from Blip. I don't have to serve them from my website. They will serve them out. If you look at my web pages, you'll see the one-touch player right below it says iPod Ready Video. That's the link that FeedBurner is scooping up and sending out to my subscribers. So with one action, I basically accomplished two results. I fed my casual visitors, and I fed my, more importantly, subscribers, who I really want to serve as well, with the high-quality MPEG-4 video. Yes?
And the Pro account's great if you want to convert videos. If you're lazy or have a slower computer and you want to convert the videos to various formats, you throw it anything, and it'll spit out multiple versions of the same video in different formats, resized, and everything.
What's that cost?
I believe it's $5 a month.
those are my big ones, actually. Those are the big services. Twitter, I've already mentioned, of course. Less so, I use Seismic occasionally. I was one of an early users of Seismic. That community kind of, the early adopter community of Seismic kind of disappeared. I was like, me and two other people I remember from my earlier days on there. It's interesting, again, haven't really figured out a way to, you know, integrate it in. I've tried some things with it, which I think I'm going to try again. I tried a series with it, which is basically Doug's Neat Friends, where I'd bring in one of my neat friends, my friend John Brainy, who's a songwriting doctor, very well known in the music industry. I'd bring him and send him down. We'd take a half hour, an hour, and we would just say, hi, here's John. I want to introduce you to John. And then people could ask questions back, and we could reply, and just would go on for a half hour or so. I think it's a great concept, and I'm probably going to do that again. I found that to actually be sort of fun, and I thought it was a good use of Seismic because it keeps everything threaded, so even though it's an asynchronous conversation, you can go back and review the entire conversation that took place. Seismic has the ability to quickly record something, and then I can embed that in my webpage, which I just did. I actually recorded a invite to Career Camp, which, by the way, highly invite you all to this thing we're doing called Career Camp Online, and it's basically an online bar camp style career camp, and I'd love to have your career knowledge. And one of the ways I'm telling people to do that is you can use Blip, you can use YouTube, you can use Seismic, whatever, record your presentation and then drop it in the site where Career Camp is taking place. So again, use that. Utterly, I sort of like. Utterly is, for me, it used to be called Utters. Very particular use that I use for Utterly is when I'm out and about and something cool is going on. And I'll take a picture and I'll record. You call the phone number, you record it in, record your podcast, take a picture, send it in, it applies it to the post. It puts it on Utters or Utterly, and then it actually will post it to my blog as a complete package with photo, with a video, if your phone's capable of doing video, with a text description, and with the audio. And one feature I can point to and say, I got this feature added to a website. When they first started doing, when they posted the audio post to your website, to your blog, they didn't have any MP3 link in it. It was just a link back to their player or back to their site. And I said, I use FeedBurner. If you could just put down in the corner a little MP3 link, I would really like that. Because guess what? When they do that, FeedBurner scoops it up and, again, serves all my subscribers. All the people who've given me their permission with no extra effort on my part, boom, they get it in their iTunes. Great idea.
One of our Orange County podcasters actually does an Utterly podcast. He does the entire thing off of that. It's barefoot in the garage. He wakes up in the morning, doesn't have any shoes on, goes out into the garage, calls it up and says, it is 53 degrees in the garage today, and he just does his 5-minute show. And he goes back into the house, he sends up a little, you know, little photo of whatever he wants to do, and he does it. That's his show. It's a show, and he has another podcast as well, but that's the way that he, you know, gets his...
My wife and I co-teach a class for UCLA Extension called Podcasting and New Media for Writers. And I just gave a talk about DevLearn up in San Jose in November. And one of the things that I tend to focus on, at least towards the end of these classes, is non-traditional ways of podcasting, if you can come up with non-traditional ways of podcasting, but non-traditional ways of podcasting, such as using Utterly, Seismic, and stuff like that. I use those as introductory things to them. You don't have to get a microphone. You have to get a computer. Just take your phone. Take your phone, go out, record an interview with someone. I actually did it hasn't been years ago. A friend of ours works at JPL. The Stardust probe was landing that had collected cosmic dust. He invited us over to JPL to be with the friends and family at JPL during that whole lot. I actually live audio blogged it back in the days of, what was it, audioblog.com on Blogger with my cheap little cell phone. Came out really well. I was really surprised. You know, there's an energy in that. My whole thing is the power in new media is in the doing. And if I can get you doing it, I'm pretty much convinced you'll continue. And so everything I do with these people is to get them started. Get the snowball rolling. Because I find that once you get the snowball rolling, it's like, wow, this isn't that hard. And God, oh, and I actually do have a lot to say. And all of a sudden, you know, boom, away they go. And that makes me feel tremendously great. It's one of the favorite parts about speaking and teaching and stuff like that is watching people start their own shows and start doing their own things and experiencing some success and some happiness in their life that maybe they weren't getting some other way. 12seconds.tv, another interesting site, literally 12-second videos. Again, fun to play with. Haven't really figured out a real great way of using it yet for anything productive, but it's cute. If you haven't heard, Doug Kay, how many people are familiar with Doug Kay from IT Conversations? Okay, big early podcasting before podcasting was podcasting. His new project, which I don't know if you've heard about, is spokenword.org. And for audio podcasters, I think this is a tremendous boon. I describe it as a YouTube for audio. Okay? Spokenword.org. It is, submit your feeds, submit your shows. It, on the front page, it highlights latest shows in these different categories. It uses the iTunes categories with your logos, everything else. People can collect your shows. They can say, oh, I really like this episode. I really like this whole show. Add it to one of my collections. And then those collections generate their own RSS feeds, which actually people can subscribe. I have a collection called My Personal Master's Degree, because I don't have a master's degree, but I feel after 45 years, I'm starting to get one all on my own. And it contains stuff like In Our Time from the BBC and Thinking Aloud from the BBC and The Writer's Almanac from Garrison Keillor and stuff like that. You know, basically interesting educational shows. And you can do the same thing. You create all these custom feeds. People then can collect your collection, or they can subscribe to your collection because they like what you collected. It's in just coming out of alpha. It's been totally open even in alpha to anybody, but not a lot of people have known about it. I think he just officially launched it into beta now. It's cool, and I think it's something that we as audio podcasters have needed for a long time. The ability to find podcasts, you know, directories I don't think serve us that well. So I'm really liking the way this is laid out and kind of the concept behind it. And finally tonight, the last thing I want to mention is ing.com social networking. Have your own Facebook. Why not? I actually have a discussion on my blog about why. I set up one for my Career Opportunities podcast. I had actually been toying with it for a long time. I had set it up, and I never launched it. Because, like, well, you know, if we got Facebook, you got things. So I said, you know what? Let's throw it against a wall. It cost me nothing. Let's throw it against a wall and see what sticks. Well, you know what? It started to gain traction. There, in the blog post, I explain it in that there are certain things, like a group like this, where local still is better. Sometimes you only really want to talk with this smaller group of people. You don't want to talk to the Twitter world out there. You just want to talk amongst yourselves. Because you, for whatever reason, you respect the people who've collected around you. And I think these ing sites provide a way of each one of us setting up our own social network that is about our topic, our thing. I have one for newmediainterchange.com as well, my new media site that I founded. It's a place for us to talk about new media issues. Things don't get lost in all the clutter when you do something like this. It's still open to the world, still indexed by Google, still people can still find it if they want it, but you don't feel you're shouting into the cave and hearing the echo back. It's not getting lost amongst all the other noise. And so I decided, yeah, let's do that. In fact, I'm using the Career Opportunities Ing site as the host for CareerCamp. I said, well, I already got it set up, and actually, guess what? We can have rooms. And we can embed video in the rooms. And then there's a discussion group for the question and answer session. So why not? What you'll find is once you start delving into some of these services, you start saying why not a lot. It's like, well, heck, I already did that. I've already got the room. Why not use the room? You know, I've already got the studio. Why not use it for comedy and dancing? And you got the room. You know, why not? Same thing applies online. That is all I have for now. Any further questions?
One more.
Sure.
What do you think of Yahoo or Google Groups?
I abandoned Yahoo 2 or 3 years ago and moved all of my stuff to Google. There were some technological reasons for that. There were some ideological reasons for that. And I'm not a big one to have be all ideological about blah, blah, blah. But when they did the thing where they turned over the information to the Chinese authorities and had some bloggers allow them to be arrested, it just didn't sit well. And I'm not saying Google doesn't do that as well, as we found that happens as well. The other technological reason was they went to strictly rich text emails with huge honking ads in them, which that was a technological reason. I said, forget it. I had already set up some newer groups on Google, and I said, I'm just going to move everybody over there. So I like Google Groups. I have found one problem. It's not Google's. Well, it is sort of Google's problem, but only by comparison. If you have an email address serviced by GoDaddy, be it a real email box or an alias, they are now rejecting all mail containing any links to Google Groups and perhaps other services. So I know this because my email address is hosted by my GoDaddy, and I wasn't getting messages. And I have an email from them that says, yes, we block any message, silently block. They don't bounce it. They block it. It just disappears. From anything containing a Google Groups link in it. They will say they're protecting their network. Think about it though, what you may. I think it's idiotic, especially on an alias. My email box isn't even really an email box; it's just a redirect. Why are you looking at my mail at all? You know. So, as you can tell, I'm not real happy with that. But just to be aware of it, that's one of those silly things that's occurred. If you have any further questions, please feel free to talk to me on any of the sites we've talked about tonight. You can email me directly at Douglas@WelchWrite.com. That's WelchWrite.com. You'll find me on Twitter as D.E. Welch, because I set up my Twitter account before I moved to change my naming convention to my full name. So most everywhere else you'll find me as Douglas Welch now. And that's a whole other topic we can talk about using your real name on social networks. Dang it.
What did you say your Twitter was?
D.E. Welch. Douglas Edward Welch. So,
do you think that's good or bad to use your real name?
I think it's good. I think if you're planning on being out there, which is theoretically why you join these sites, make it for easy people to identify you as who you are. I know if I get a Twitter name that's got any numbers in it at all, I immediately suspect. It's like, what? What's this? Because a lot of Twitter spam followers, you know, just are random numbers.
I know we're running short, but what do you think about having multiple Twitter accounts?
I do.
Different sub-segments of people that you want to follow you and you follow them.
In my case, I don't do it for that purpose. I do it because I have my main account, which is pretty much me. Douglas D. E. Welch. I have a career tips Twitter and I have a new media tips Twitter specifically for those. So that's how I divided it. I would find it too much trouble. It's much like people will sometimes say, you know, they don't want a presentation taped or a panel discussion taped because they don't know what they said in the panel discussion. They don't want it out there. It's like, I said it in front of people. Why wouldn't? What if I'm better if it's out there on the internet? You know, I've already done it. Hiding the proof of it doesn't make it anything less. So I would have trouble dividing my Twitter accounts, I think, because I sort of am who I am.
The funny thing is the leads I have gotten have not been through the account I set up for the business.
Mm-hmm.
They're because people know me on the main account,
yep.
And they trust me. And so if they have a need for the service that I'm also offering, that's where I'm going
to go. It's a personal relationship. Mm-hmm. Again, it all goes back to that. Yes, sir.
Let me just bounce off you something I'm doing to try to get qualified results. I mean, qualified contacts. And I'm in LinkedIn, almost Facebook and Twitter. But on LinkedIn, it seems to be that I can join groups that is of common interest to what I'm talking about.
And that's a new service. That's a new service. Yeah.
That I'm involved with, and then I can start inviting members who are sharing that common interest to follow me on LinkedIn, but then I export that list once I've accepted and then check out Facebook. Because in LinkedIn, I don't want to say I'm eating a cheeseburger today. But I may say I'm eating a cheeseburger today on Facebook.
There's a great podcast, by the way, called Marketing Over Coffee. Christopher Penn and John Walsh, I think. Marketing Over Coffee. They actually record it at 6 a.m. in a Dunkin' Donuts near where they live. They just had a great show on that about synchronizing your social networks. And I did a little bit of that. For some reason, LinkedIn's context export is not working right now. And it's not just for me. I found other mentions of it. It ain't working right now because I wanted to do that. What I did do is I have a new media interchange group on LinkedIn. That is not the focus. Again, this is, you know, which services do you use more usually. It's just there so people can get a little badge for new media on their LinkedIn profile. That's basically why I did it. And I refer people over to the main place for the stuff for that group. But I did. I exported the list from that group and then fed it into the New Media Interchange community site and the mailing list to make sure that I had got those people at least invited to the home group. Right. And that is one way of doing that.
Well, I seem to think that LinkedIn allowed me, it just appeared to me that I could get a more quality contact.
The quality of LinkedIn contact, there are some safeguards built into LinkedIn to make the contacts higher quality. If you see anyone who has a LinkedIn name, though, that has their email address in the name, they just defeated that. Because that means anybody, they want anyone to be able to invite them to their network. That's the way they want to be, fine. That is not the way LinkedIn was designed to work. And I'm surprised actually that that continued to happen, but I guess they really didn't care. So they can be defeated. But typically, yes. I will say with LinkedIn, though, I haven't really found the deep utility of LinkedIn yet for me. And I'm one of those people who goes, you know, it's like Evernote. It's a great system, but I just can't make it work the way I could use it to make it better for me. So it's one of those weird things. I do still use it. In fact, I just added a bunch of people that I basically went through my mailing and address book. And when I'm out speaking, I collect business cards, and it's like, who is this person? And I just said, you know what? You were in my email address book. I believe I met you at this event, or this event, or this event. You know, if you'd like to add me to your network, please do. And then when they added me, I could see their profile and say, ah, that's who this is. And again, one of those kind of iffy things for me, it's like, oh, am I going to tick people off doing this? But you know what? I got several responses back. Oh, man, we've been needing to hook up. You know, I'm sorry. I've been so lax in reconnecting. It's like, okay. Again, I had to tell myself I was not stepping over the line. I was actually just kind of stepping up to the line. And, you know, that's a very personal thing about me is I don't want to feel like I'm ticking people off. But I realize there's still some distance I have there to go. So try it. Try a little bit here, a little bit there. Try bringing, you know, your LinkedIn contacts over and running them up. And they actually recommend that highly. You know, they talk about house list and email marketing, and you know, they're real hardcore. Black hat, red hat, you know, black hat, white hat. They'll talk about, what do they call it? Red saber, green saber, for a Star Wars reference. They try to stay on the good side, but they're heavily into marketing. It's what their whole thing is, and that was one of their shows. So I think it was their most recent show on that site, but highly recommended. Any other questions for tonight? I thank you so much. Yes, sir.
One last one. MySpace has a thing called MySpace ad, like so many things. So many cents per click.
Mm-hmm.
Make this little tiny thing, and they spend all over the place, and you control how much you want to spend. What's your input on that? You want to get the word out to millions of people about to check out my show.
For someone like myself, it's simply not financially feasible. The return I would get on an ad like it for my show would be negligible. It would be pretty much, I think, at least, unless someone could give me better thinking about it, it would be wasted money. Someone like yourself, you have to be very careful because you want to geographically, since you're doing a physical event, right?
It's in everybody check out my show. It's got cool music, lots of gossip.
So you want to advertise
stuff. All the MySpace drama. Yeah.
Again, music, very, very popular in MySpace. MySpace to me now, my thinking about MySpace is the people who are really getting the juice from MySpace are the music people. Because they have their special area, they have their special music players, they've got all this. So for me, and this is again my thing, I see MySpace as being more kind of a haven for music types. So yeah, it could be beneficial. It could be beneficial. The one thing you'd find out right away is, does it work or not? Because you know, when you're getting pay-per-click ads, you know exactly what's happening. Someone clicked in there, someone didn't. And so you would know if your money, and pay-per-click is going to cost you less than pay-per-impression, of course, and probably is going to garner better results for you as well. Okay? I want to thank all of you for coming, and it's always great to be down here. I don't get down this way nearly enough, but it's always a pleasure to come and speak with you guys. Again, if you have any questions, any discussions, you can find me now. And feel free to add me on Facebook, add me on MySpace, whatever. You'll find it. It's Douglas@Waltrite.com in, I think, almost all cases. Or search on my name, Douglas Welch. I am the number one hit in Google for my name. Thank you very much. We were talking earlier about what's your SEO strategy, what's your search engine optimization strategy. My goal is I just bury Google in content. That's my SEO. Thanks again.
This is Careers in New Media with Douglas C. Welch. For more information, visit the website, welchwrite.com/CIP. That's welchwrite.com/CIP.